513-524-9839. This is KPFT Houston.
You're listening to KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. Stay tuned for Technology Bites next.
Contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Does this mean we're supposed to be talking about
We
stuff?
Should be talking.
We're out of practice.
There's so much talking to be done.
I heard somebody doesn't like this song.
I hate this song.
What?
No, that's my thing now. It's like I'll be...
You just hate things?
Yeah.
Just hate everything now?
I hate the stuff that
you
I
like,
do.
You like it, the original.
Now he's outwardly grumpy.
It's very... I don't hate the song. I hate the guy who queued it up.
You can always play us. You can play us the alternate house trance intro you did that one time. This is our scene intro or whatever you call it. That was nice. I like that song.
No,
saving that for Christmas, I guess.
It's my new grumpy old tech shtick. You know, I'll be sitting at my desk. Some user will come by, getting stuff done. You know, talking to one of the other techs or something. Man, I hate computers. It's incongruous at curmudgeonness. All right, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's?
Gruvels.
Perfect show.
Can we just stop right here?
Thank you, and good night.
Drop the mic.
So, yeah, we weren't here last week, which was awesome.
That was the perfect show.
That was the perfect
Oh, that wasn't us?
Yeah, that was the Amy Goodman Bites show, or the election bites. They're covering the.
It so does.
It does. God, I hate this election.
It's going to be over soon, man.
No, it's not. It's gonna be 4 years of people complaining about whoever it is. Get in it. It's gonna be terrible.
And 4 years of retrospectives. Remember that time 17 minutes ago when the election was still going?
Oh, Lord. Well, we're not here to talk about the election.
That's what Facebook is for.
That's what Unfriendly Friends on Facebook is for. But anyway, welcome to the show. We're going to be here for 2 hours. We had a fundraiser, and then we didn't have the last fundraising episode because the universe took pity on us or something, which was great.
It's the only thing Donald Trump's ever done for me.
The universe did
Thank
weep.
You, Donald Trump. Yeah, we thought we were going to have to do a third fundraiser. That was the idea. But then the station manager said, oh, in case I didn't tell you, you were preempted because we're going to be covering the presidential debate. So for those of you that were...
And all the people said, oh,
yeah,
really.
People that wanted a distraction from that and wanted to... I mean, I don't know which is more nerve-grinding.
Fundraising?
Trying to fundraise or watching Clinton and Hillary go after
each
other.
That's a no-win situation.
Really, yes. Oh, the worst
Much
of both
like
worlds.
The pickle we find ourselves in.
Ooh, that's a pickle. All right, so...
that's quite ever.
We will endeavor to have 2 hours of just really good radio Pete's TV, and maybe we'll get a dog barking.
Yeah, what are we watching tonight? Can we channel surf? Can you go up 2 channel speed?
Does he have Apple TV? Siri.
Amazon Echo is tying in the Harmony line of all the Logitech stuff, which means that pretty soon Amazon will be able to, I guess, be able to control your TV, all that kind of stuff.
Really?
Because I broke my remote control. It had like a little rattly part in there for a while.
Is that a song? I broke my remote control.
It should be.
It's like a Weird Al song.
Song of my life. So I was looking around, and the day I was looking around, Echo came out and said, hey, we're going to support, you know, that whole family. I think it's going to be a race. It's going to be like a big land rush, you know, just get as many properties as they can for all the big players like Apple.
Is the Amazon Echo going to get as frustrated with not being able to make these universal remotes work as people are?
We'll see. It'll start cursing in the middle of the night, lighting up. The blue ring turns to red as it tries to change Netflix.
I'm wondering if there's been some intelligence built into the Amazon Echo in the recent weeks, or if there's been some change in the commercials. Because I noticed the Amazon commercials, when they say Alexa, don't always activate my Amazon Echo anymore.
There needs to be some kind of little control code that it puts out, like the same control code that'll say, like, take over the world or, you know, destroy and kill. It does, you know, like, don't respond to commercial. They should bake that in.
Yeah, I mean, I would have just changed the voice or I don't know, but it seems like it's not activating like it used to, because the first time one of the Amazon Echo commercials came on and they said Alexa, it lit up and then it responded.
The smart thing would be, this would be the cool thing, to record the commercial on something, play it back, and see if they blocked out that exact voice pattern, because that would be the smart thing to do. Like, they know what commercials they're doing. Throw those umpteen commercials, you know, down into Alexa and just don't respond to it.
I don't know how I could scan out one way of saying its name as opposed to the fact that it spontaneously responds to things that are not Alexa.
Well, I think they just say not after every time they say Alexa. In the commercials.
Or just change all your devices to Echo.
Hey, Alexa, not.
Amazon.
Anyway.
Now you know the secret.
That's like German.
Nicht.
All right, so visit us online at geekradio.com. We also have the ability to access our IRC there.
IRCs.
Cuckoo. We have the irc.geekradio.com,
irc.net.
Oh, we're finding our happiness again. It's not fundraiser. We had a week off. I was just so glad to just not have to come in for just 1 week. It was nice just to take it to myself. I forget what a nice Wednesday night can be.
We were talking before the show, too, and Jay Lee's had around. He's been down in cisterns. He's been, you know, not up in space, but in the room where they sent people up in space. And then TV without actually being on TV.
That's right.
Yeah.
You found out how clouds are born and
how
rain works.
I found out how weather was made. Tim Heller showed me how the weather's made.
It was a time of learning.
It was a time of learning and great creative.
This is all disturbing.
Lee went on. Apparently, Lee is Mr. Universe.
I can tell you all about
in
space.
In body and in mind. And
well.
Space docent.
I wish I was.
Space docent.
that's a business card there, man.
Coming on Netflix this fall.
Now I have the greatest idea for Lee's space Docent YouTube channel.
10% to Barrett.
You can have some of my ad revenue from my awesome channel that I will set up.
Yeah, so you can go to geekradio.com. That's where we post the podcast and stuff. And you can also hang out in the IRC with us because we have the IRC client built in there. But if you want to use your own IRC, go to irc.geekradio.com or irc.failure.net if you want to use that one. And the channel is Tech Bites.
I think we're all just happy to be alive after we brought in like a batch of tainted Soylent bars.
So we had
unbeknownst.
I missed something. So the Soylent that you brought in that we all partook of.
The bars.
It was
well documented. We took pictures. They would have known who gave them to us.
But some of that was contaminated.
They said that something like 0.003% of the people who bought them reported sudden onset, like projectile vomiting and other
expellings. We didn't buy them. They gave them to us.
Yeah.
They're totally
But the thing is, so they're not really sure why, right? Soylent thinks it was because people are having a reaction to the soy that's in the bar, because there's more soy in the bar than there is in the liquid stuff. But the people who got sick, several of the folks who got sick took pictures of the bars that made them sick and posted them on the Soylent forums. And the pictures all had like green and yellow like oily slimy stuff like on the bar.
That was the Soylent green,
I guess. So one of the folks who got sick, and the message is still on the forum. I'd have to dig up a link for it, but I read it. This person was like, "Well, I unwrapped it and there was kind of like this green slimy film all over the bar, but I figured that this is like, you know, probably was supposed to be there and it's all natural ingredients anyway. So I just ate it anyway. And then I got super sick." I was like, "Well, yeah, man, I wouldn't eat that with the pictures that they posted. It had junk all over it." So yes, apparently the Soylent bars are making some people sick and they're don't eat them.
Turning you a lovely shade of Soylent green.
If your bar has slime.
Do not eat the slime. Scrape the slime off.
Return the bar.
And after the guy said that to the camera, it panned over to his counter that had expired meat and, past date cans that are, like, puffed out on the ends.
That's where the flavor comes from.
Got a deal on all this food.
They were just going to throw it away.
I'm a freegan.
Ew.
A freak.
You haven't heard of
only
that?
It's free food.
Basically, eat out of dumpsters.
Well, you know, people throw good food.
That's
away.
That's our insensitivity quota for the night.
People throw good food away in there.
Yeah, it's free. It's a movement. It's like a
is it
culture.
Really?
Yeah, freegans.
Yeah, it's I didn't a... make it. No, wait. I just made that up.
No, that term's been around for like several years at least.
Long time.
It's a
been
thing.
Been around a while.
It's a thing in California.
And, I mean, it's
look
so,
up at a restaurant.
It's so California well known people, that, yeah. Like, several years ago, there was an Onion article satirizing those people. So,
can you have subsets of freeganism? Can you be a vegan freegan?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, but
can you be a freegan
freegan? Vegan freegan? Yeah.
Vegan freegans? Copyright.
Make sure that's not on the FCC list. Yeah, we can say vegan. That's cool.
Well, the really amusing part website.
Got to make sure that vegan isn't one of the seven deadlies. Oh, my God.
No, it's KPFD. We actually have to say veganism every two hours.
I think we do.
Top of the hour. FCC
ID. Top of the
hour ID.
Is the station ID. The bottom veganism. Of the hour is mentioned the vegans.
Veganism.
We miss the vegans. We used to be followed by vegans for a long time. It's
oh,
not
yeah.
just because we smelled like vegetables.
By the vegans, too. They didn't like the way that we didn't take them seriously.
There's we two, always took them seriously.
There's two groups of people who will always self-identify in any kind of group, and one of them are vegans. You always know, like that's kind of the joke, right?
Free BSD users.
No, I was gonna say Amiga users. Oh. The Amiga users are the other.
No,
ones.
But free BSD users there. Are. I mean, look at the back of Flicked's laptop.
Yeah. Oh, is he one of them?
Yeah, he is.
I'm sorry,
he doesn't even run anymore.
Can you
it's,
explain
that's just
in one sentence the difference between System 5 mainstream Unix and BSD? Can you give me the ones? I caught you while you're
Can
in there
you give
chewing.
Them the ones and zeros on this.
Aside from POSIX.
After you're done chewing, tell
vegan
me
vegan BSD.
Give me the one sentence breakdown between Unix and BSD.
Like System 5 and
yeah,
BSD.
Yeah, yeah. What's the difference between like Unix. A mainline System 5 descendant Unix Linux, which I
so
would put
B,
in like
the,
all
the,
of the Linux offshoots that we
the
use
BSD
today.
One example: the BSD variants use.
No. One, you have one sentence. You got one sentence to tell me what the real difference is here.
The BSD variants use etc init.d, and the System 5 use etc rc number.d.
Yeah, but not anymore, because the latest version of Debian and Debian Wheezy and then Ubuntu or Debian
it's a
Jenny.
Trap. None of those are BSDs.
But what I was going to say
they've gone to.
Yeah, Debian Jenny uses Systemd now.
Systemd,
which
yeah.
is horrifying.
I haven't dug into Systemd.
Really, there's a huge ugly. You would need probably like two reams of paper.
I've seen
a really nice dot matrix printer to print the whole long thing.
It really is.
And there's so much splintering, and there's so much like PLO, LPO. I mean, it's Monty Python-esque in a lot of parts. And then some of them get back together and make up, and then they have kids, and they split together, and they fight over the kids, and it just gets really ugly.
I haven't run FreeBSD since, I think, version 6.
OpenBSD dropped a new version a little while ago.
I never ran OpenBSD or NetBSD.
OpenBSD was the most fun to install.
Which is the one that you're not supposed to use because Oracle owns it or something.
No, that's not Jay's stuff.
No, that's he's your.
Who'd they just buy? They bought SUSE. They didn't buy SUSE.
Did they buy SUSE?
Jay's got SUSE, right?
We got SUSE, but we did not get
so
Oracle.
So hold on. What does Oracle have?
I know they have like Oracle Security Linux or whatever.
No, they just bought something big, I thought.
Yeah.
Well, they were into Linux though, not BSD.
Yeah, I've always heard if you're gonna stand up a firewall, you should stand up a BSD firewall because otherwise you risk a lot of angry BSD people telling you your firewall is stupid and bad.
What version is angry BSD up to now?
A lot of places they rename a lot of software distributions. They revised because they had that old school where it's like I think the first version I ran was 4. And they had 4.1, 4.2, 4.3, 4.4, whatever. They went to 5, 5.1, 5.2, 5.3, 6. But then I think they went to that, fast cycle, and so they're probably up in the 20s by now.
Can we just say it's a different kernel that works differently? And that's the best way of saying it. It's a different kernel and a different collection of utilities. But it's sort of the same, but it's different, but the
Except
same.
Except BSD is real Unix.
See, yes. There you go. There it is. That's
there
what
it
I was
is.
Waiting
for. Personal preference and religion.
That's what I was waiting
too.
For.
All right. Linux is just an emulator.
Shouldn't you be saying GNU Linux?
Hey, Stallman.
Hey, speaking of which, it's time for the info show.
Oh, right.
GNUs.
Okay.
The GNUs.
With Gary GNU?
Great Space Coaster reference. Wow.
There we go.
All the kids of the 70s are rejoicing right now.
Well, Space Coast had a bit of a resurgence in the...
No, Space Coaster.
Oh, Space Coaster.
The Great Coaster. Space Coaster.
No, what? I'm not even familiar
it was
with that.
It was like a variety show that was on before I was alive, but...
You're out playing music and doing fun things in the 70s
come on,
when you're watching this.
Come on, Jay Lee. Quick, catch up.
There's a green GNU that wore a jacket, had a mic, and
yeah, it's Gary GNU. Gary GNU with the GNUs.
But that wasn't with the Great Ape or anything?
Great Space Coaster.
No, that was different. That was Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah, this was just a really lame kind of variety show, kids show thing. Anyway, yeah, why don't we do that news?
Let's go to San Antonio and get down with the Technology Bites Info Shot. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Wow. You know, there's no way to go back and recap. You lived through the past couple of weeks where we didn't really report and do stuff, so we'll just call it time to start. We'll start over. There were just a lot of things happening, but, you were on your own for those. Maybe next time we have a pledge drive, pledge on it to make sure that we're around a lot to tell you about this kind of stuff. Got some, possibly not great news from the Google Fiber world. Apparently they are cut. Google is kind of pulling way back from what they were doing before. The company, Google is part of the bigger company called Alphabet that they formed a while back. Whatever, but the division that operates Google Fiber is laying off or reassigning about 9% of its staff, as well as pausing or ending fiber operations in 10 different cities where it hadn't yet fully committed to building. In San Francisco, the ISP has pulled back from a fiber deployment that was previously described as definite, but they are going to switch that and do a wireless service of some sort instead. Google Fiber Chief Craig Barrett, not to be confused with Barrett, will step down from his post and will be an advisor to Google Fiber. He won't be replaced, and they say this is not the end of Google Fiber, but the deal is that there are 8 metro areas where they already offer Google Fiber, and they are still committed to building in another 4. Google Fiber also recently purchased a wireless ISP called WebPass, which offers high-speed wireless internet in 6 metro areas and seems set on expanding wireless service. It sounds like a lot of the issue is the cost of laying the fiber to even the last mile, and the subscription rate not being enough to support what they were trying to do. They've not hit their subscriber goals apparently, but they're switching to wireless as an approach to. It sounds like they're switching to wireless as a replacement for the fiber. According to the memo from Bharat, these changes to our business and technology will have some immediate implications. Some of our efforts will remain unchanged, but others will be impacted. In terms of our existing footprint in the cities where we've launched or are under construction, work will continue. For most of our, quote, potential fiber cities, unquote, those where we've been in exploratory discussions, we're going to pause operations and offices while we refine our approaches. In this handful of cities that are still in an exploratory stage and in certain related areas of our supporting operations, we'll be reducing our employee base. You know, the places, let's see, here's where Google Fiber will and won't be deploying internet service. Google Fiber is already available in Atlanta, Georgia, Austin, Texas, Charlotte, North Carolina, Kansas City, both the Missouri and Kansas one, Nashville, Provo, Utah, Salt Lake City, Utah, and the Triangle in North Carolina. They're still publicly committed to building in Huntsville, Alabama, Irvine, California, San Antonio, Texas, and Louisville, Kentucky. Everywhere else that they've mentioned before, they're on hold. They're paused, I guess would be the way to put it. That's places like Chicago and Dallas, Texas, and Portland, Oregon. Notice that cities like, say, Houston, Texas, are not even on the list of potentials that aren't going to get, they're not even paused. They weren't even started. So we'll be interested to see what's happening there. One thing that in Louisville, Kentucky, apparently AT&T and Charter Communications have sued Louisville to stop a new ordinance that would give Google Fiber easier access to utility poles, although they said that the lawsuit will not stop it from building in that community. Separate from Fiber, Google Fiber, the WebPass operation is in Boston, Chicago, Miami, San Diego, Oakland, and San Francisco, which is apparently WebPass supposedly provides fiber-like speeds, but with the downside of more limited deployment. The wireless technology for this is cost-effective for multi-unit residential buildings and businesses, but not suburban single-family homes. So it's kind of like back in the day there was an ISP in Houston that hit apartments, that hit specific apartment buildings, and it was like really high speed for the time. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but their focus was on particular apartments, and you got really great internet for that.
Walden.
I thought that doesn't trigger the memory to me, but I thought it was like, oh gosh, I'll have to Google it at some point. But there was a company that nothing's coming on that one. But they did multiple locations around Houston. They had apartment complexes and stuff where they had service, and you had, for the time, you had very high speed internet compared to even what you got with cable and others. Apparently this wireless, my guess is that they're using wireless for the backhaul, and so then they network all the run regular network for the inside all the units, this is just my guess. We'll have to research it more, and then use high speed wireless to connect it up to some central point for internet access. And then the other one, apparently the Google Pixel camera designers really, really liked that first Star Trek reboot movie. Because apparently the Redditors and members of Google's own Pixel user community have been reporting cases of extreme lens flaring in the overwhelming majority of handsets. As many photographers will tell you, lens flare can be caused by a variety of factors, and it doesn't even require J.J. Abrams to be there. It can be a cool and desirable artistic effect, but it also can... it also can mess up your pictures. Good news is Google says there's nothing wrong with your Pixel hardware, so there's no reason to replace your device if you find your bright sunlit shots are suddenly dappled with unwanted halos. The company says that a software update to the HDR Plus mode will correct the problem in the next couple of weeks. So either you don't want to do that update, or you want to take plenty of pictures in your home version of the Star Trek command deck that you've been working on in your basement, where you can get that total halo, lens flare extreme effect with your new Pixel phone. And let's see, the big thing that happened last week, and just there's kind of more stuff has come out on it. The big denial of service, distributed denial of service attack that happened last week, which, again, you've already heard more about it, or hopefully heard about it. But one of the things, in case it happens again, if you're seeing this kind of thing happen, one of the things that apparently made it a lot worse was when people couldn't access websites and they kept reloading the web pages for those sites, trying to get them to load up. That just made it worse, according to an article in Mashable. And by the way, all the articles, the links and stuff for the articles and that we're talking about tonight, at least the vast majority of them, are on at geekradio.com. They're already posted, so you can even like go ahead and cheat and look like you psychic or whatever. Anyways, so the deal is, the company was called Dyn, D-Y-N, or is called Dyn, and they provide domain name services to some of the most popular websites on the internet. And, so they were flooded with junk data, like we said, and we'll talk more about how it was done in a bit. But apparently one of the things that made it worse was... when people were trying to get in, according to a Wednesday post on Dyn's website, it was hard to distinguish legitimate from malicious traffic at the time. They thought they were defending themselves from something even bigger because many IP addresses were generating 10 to 20 times their normal amount of traffic. And what it was, they found out, is that people were sitting and refreshing their browser window over and over again. And it was, of course, making new requests for the DNS, and so it just added to the load for it. So it may be that you want to, in the future, if you're hearing about a distributed denial of service attack against a site you like, maybe consider just walk away or or just don't refresh. One trick would be is if you can find, maybe if you've got sites that you just can't live without, you can prepare ahead by finding out what are some of their IP addresses, and then you can just put that directly in your browser and go right to the site that way, in case that there's a DNS. Although, I don't know if that will get attacked again or not. And then from PC World, talking about where this came from, it sounds like the consensus seems to be that 100,000 devices, the Internet of Things, Remember, we've talked over the past how many months about security with the Internet of Things, and apparently there's plenty of stuff out there that's completely insecure, like, oh, things like hard-coded passwords that you can't change. That's a good way to, you know, you sell 50,000 cameras with hard-coded, you know, webcams with hard-coded passwords, and nothing bad could ever happen on that, could it? But yeah, an estimated 100,000 devices were used, many of which may have been infected with a notorious malware that can take over cameras and DVRs, this is according to Dyne.
It was like 100,000 internet devices all cried out at once for DNS resolution and were suddenly cut quiet.
Well, except they were calling out for more like NDS or ABC, some other resolution, because it was all malformed requests, so it would clog things up, right? And it was it's a botnet. It sounds like it's a rental botnet where you can essentially just, you know, sign up and take and use it. Called Mirai, M-I-R-A-I. This has already been blamed for causing at least part of Friday's distributed denial of service attack. On Wednesday, Dyne provided new findings saying Mirai infected devices were actually the primary source. The statement also suggests that the hackers behind the attack may have been holding back. Companies have observed variants of the malware spreading to more than 500,000 devices built with weak default passwords, making them easy to infect. So they were not, this was not them at full force. This was, you wonder, so was this a tryout? Were they, was this them just testing it out for some other purpose later, or what? I guess we'll have to keep our eyes open to see what happens. You know, the deal though is, think about if there's a basically botnet for hire, that can point at any server or network that potentially is big enough that you can't get enough bandwidth to avoid the consequences. Last month, a Mirai botnet attacked a website owned by Brian Krebs, a cybersecurity journalist, with 665 gigabits per second of traffic, which, of course, was enough to take it down. But, you know, enough with these bad black hat hackers. There was a cool, I don't know if you've seen them. I am a fan of what's in my bag type articles and see what people carry, kind of their everyday carry. What are the devices that they use? How do they use them? Finally, they had kind of the best one, which, you know, from a standpoint of publicity, it's not great timing. But Mr. Robot's, Elliot Alderton's backpack. They basically a group of people kind of put together what they think is generally inside based on, obviously, lots of watching the show. According to some snoopers on Reddit, the backpack on the show is most likely a 3V Velox 2. And inside it, alongside a copious amount of drugs, you don't have to carry that if you wanted to be like Elliot, going based on Wired and Quora, what he tends to have in his bag that he carries is an iPhone 6 Plus, a Samsung Galaxy S5. Ooh, maybe in the next season they can have something where he rigs an explosive device out of a 7. A Nexus 5 with NetHunter installed. A laptop with Kali Linux installed, as well as Metasploit, Social Engineer Toolkit, FlexiSpy, and DeepSound. Multiple USB Bluetooth dongles, various USB drives, a credit card-sized lockpick set, a USB rubber ducky, which there's just the required one if you're going to look badass, RFID thief, a Raspberry Pi, and an RSA secure ID. So that one is not yet posted to the links on the show because I didn't remember it until after I'd already posted them. I'll try and get that one up there because it also has links to where if you're wanting to – some of them are free and you can get them, you know, you can download them and it's got links to them and stuff like that. And that's the news.
All right. Yeah. Difference between FreeBSD and Linux.
That was before the news.
I
was right. I was right about that too, but no, I was right
good
about
for good for you.
They were called Walden.
Oh,
Walden was the name of the company.
The ISP.
Walden was the name of the apartment complexes. Walden West Chase, I think, was the first one.
I thought there were multiple, but it was like Infinity or Infinis something, or I thought it seemed like there was a, but there was because there were multiple. I thought there were multiple apartment complexes, and they had, you know, the thing they had in common is that this one company was the service for all of them.
Maybe the service, but I thought they were all the apartment. I know the first one was called Walden, but I thought all of them were called Walden. Like Walden and then the street or location they were in.
Because
I know the biggest, the first one, the best known one was Walden West Chase. And like I said on IRC, that's where all the EverQuest players and day traders moved into. And then a bunch of socially awkward people had a bunch of socially awkward interactions, and it all fell apart. there's a big article in, I don't remember, it was Texas Monthly or something. There was like a big like multi-page write-up about the people at Walden and like where like it disappeared, what happened, and it was like interviews with these people who like, you know, had affairs with like, you know, some girl that was an EverQuest player who had a husband that went to work, had an affair with a day trader because they were both there all the time. Like, all kinds of drama.
What are we even talking about?
Walden. On Walden.
On Walden Pond.
Thoreau for you.
The loans are back.
I have no.
Well, no, the deal was that there was you know, there was a service that was tied to apartment complexes, to a number of apartment complexes in Houston, quite a while ago, in the late 90s, that had like compellingly high speed internet versus what you could get anywhere else. Especially, you know, at the time, that was when you could only get like, you know, when you really were looking at like lame DSL, where you were spending a ton of money to get something like, you know, the 15 megabit DSL. And I thought that if I remember right, they had something along the lines of you know, kind of network speed, you know, 100 megabit internet.
Yeah, I think they
At a time when that's what, just having a network that was that fast was a big enough deal.
Yeah, they had business class carrier layer level network connections to the apartment buildings.
Even at the poolside.
Sounds like someone is speaking from experience.
No, I looked at that place pretty. Because you had that. You also had proximity to, you know, I think Best Buy was just right there on the corner. It was on Richmond. A friend of the show, Scout, lived there for a while too. I know when they first plugged in, they actually had a couple of like token rings that were out there. It wasn't just all pure Ethernet. So they kind of came up. Now, Pete might be right. The backing company might have been called Infinity or Xfinity or something along those lines. But it was Walden was the only one that was around for at least 8 or 9 years.
I know they did make some other ones, mm-hmm. that same company, but I don't know if they were all called Walden.
No, they were all further out, too. They were like further out. Like that was the closest one to the center of Houston. Everything seemed to be a little bit further out west, the ones they put up.
Well, I see.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go.
And there you have it.
There you go. Now you know the rest of the story.
Now we're busy just waiting for gigabit internet to get to places that we can actually either afford to move to or know where they are, even. Because
sure.
I know that a lot of the places that have gigabit Ethernet or gigabit internet available, the only way to find out, they don't really tell you like, oh, in this chunk of town you could potentially get it. They do the put in your address and we'll tell you whether that one address gets service or not.
I'm pretty sure
like
when AT&T I got DSL,
for San Antonio.
Pretty sure when I got DSL, it was 1.5 meg down.
Mm-hmm.
And
was
I was
standard.
Super freaking excited about it because it was way better than 56K.
Plus it didn't make noise when you connected up to it.
No, it was always on.
Mm-hmm.
And right.
Not having to dial up was weird the first time.
And I built
so.
A FreeBSD box with dual NICs as a firewall. Because, you know, you use FreeBSD as a firewall.
That's what I've heard!
That's the difference between BSD and System 5 is that Flick didn't use System 5 to protect his DSL.
I did not.
That's the definitive. That's the definitive answer.
That is one a definite.
That is a good one sentence answer.
Well, talking, you know, on the Internet of Things being used for that DDoS attack on Dyne, the solution, the answer to get around it, other than, you know, not buying the cheap ass phone or, you know, cheap ass various IoT Internet of Things devices that have hard coded passwords and stuff. But one of the things that they said is that one of the ways to be secure with your own stuff is to get the things that are paired up or that work through Amazon's tools or Google or Apple HomeKit or some of those, because then they're handling the security and it's not just talking to the internet. Yeah, basically, it sounds like a lot of these webcams are basically just naked on the internet with hard-coded passwords and direct access, and so they're, you know, so you may want to think about your choice when you get these kind of tools. You may want to look at what sort of network you're wanting to connect it to and how you want to access it, so that you don't, so you're not part of the problem.
Well, and some of them were, it wasn't just that people left the default passwords alone, although that was some of the problems. Some of it, though, is that several of these brands have, even if you log into their interface and change the password, they still have hard-coded passwords open on Telnet ports. So even if you think you've changed the password, the Telnet service is running in the background with the default password that's still accessible, and that's what Mirai scans for. So you might even think you did your due diligence, but you didn't. Probably the best thing to do is just to avoid buying, you know, that $9 Wi-Fi webcam is probably worth every bit of those $9.
Yeah, I'm thinking that you shouldn't have your job with anything related to connecting stuff to the network. If you think that Telnet is a great way to connect your device up and get access to it over the open internet, I mean, I guess under a closed network, maybe.
Telnet is great for when you need to check to see if your web or your mail server is working. Mm-hmm. Other than that, you should never use it ever.
Yeah, and Telnet fell out of favor. You know, I mean, what, it's SSH now is the...
Well, it's clear text. That was the issue with that. And right. Even just straight FTP, you're still passing your username and password in the clear. So if anyone's sniffing the network, you know, they can
pop,
get that pretty
man.
Easily.
Telling pop you. Your mail.
Everybody, pop it. Pop three.
SSH.
The only way I can get lens flare right now on my Pixel is if I take a picture of the Pixel that has lens flare on it.
You've broken the lens flare on your camera
right
already.
Underneath these overheads, yeah, really get a good flare off.
I get lens flare in my head if I stare for one of those. Let's see.
Yeah, there's a probably get a real good one off of that. Real J.J. Abrams lens flare off of
a
that.
A little bit, but I don't think any more than my old phone. It's hard to say.
Oh, wait, not J.J. Abrams. Michael Bay. Real Michael Bay lens flare off of that. I got J.J. Abrams on the brain because I'm thinking about Westworld still.
It's Abrams. Was, with the
lens flare. Star Trek, the first Star Trek reboot movie was just insane with...
Okay, so it is J.J.
It's Abrams.
Said,
yeah,
I got Abrams on the brain because I got Westworld on the brain, but I guess Abrams also does.
With that?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Do we need to have a conversation about Westworld?
At some point, we got to talk about Westworld because Westworld is da bomb.
I was the first night that we talked about Westworld here several weeks ago.
It was the week before fundraiser, I think.
Yeah. And as I was driving home, there's whatever passes for Art Bell these days on on the AM radio.
Might still be Art Bell.
It's not Art Bell, okay. But it's
Michael Nouri or whatever.
It's not even Michael Nouri. It's some other guy, and he starts and he has
fake Art Bell.
His intro and. Features negative lands, Christianity is stupid, you know, the loudspeaker spoke up and said, but doesn't say the Christianity is stupid part. But he went right into his show the night that it was driving home after that, started talking about Westworld.
Oh boy.
So it's like the singularity.
Except, but to him, it was like, you know, a harbinger of the New World Order, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, it's a way that they're, you know, softening us up for our new robotic overlords.
So it's not a reboot.
What?
So it's not a reboot.
Yeah, it is. It is a reboot.
It's a reboot, and it isn't. It has the ability to.
I haven't watched it. I just saw somebody say that, so I thought.
Isn't it more? I think in a non-spoilery way to talk about it. Isn't it essentially the first one was technology goes amok and is killing people, killing the guests, and that this is more from the standpoint of
although they haven't killed
to do
the
with
guests,
the androids and that's messing with them being like killed over and over again.
I thought it was more of an iRobot meets
kind of
Groundhog Day.
So here's the best way to explain it is which one is the Nolan brother that is not the Batman one? Because the one that's not the Batman
not
Nolan brother,
Christopher Nolan.
Okay, so Jonathan Nolan is the showrunner on it, and shortly before the first episode aired, there was a Shower Thoughts thread on Reddit. There's a subreddit called Shower Thoughts where people post Jack Handy style, like, oh man, wouldn't it be cool if, or wouldn't, isn't it weird when, and like, there was an old Shower Thoughts post where somebody posted, the thought was, wouldn't it be scary if, like, or no, which would be scarier, a robot that can pass the Turing test, or a robot that lies about being able to pass the Turing test? And the post was like 2 years old, and Nolan like dug the thread up and posted a message in it, and all the message said was like, boy, do we have a show for you. And like the fans of the show found it and like went all nuts, like, oh my god, this is a clue about what the show's going to be about. But yeah, it's sort of a like, what does it mean to be sentient? And there's probably a whole thing about, like, you know, when man becomes a creator, does the man's creator love be abdicated to his creations? There's like going to be this whole big thing about like the nature of sentience, and because the, you know, the park, it's just like in the movie, right? Guests can show up and shoot or
have
sex with robots. And in many of the points in the show where they show guests in the park, it's people acting like how people act when they're playing a video game with God mode on. They're just like running around, just shooting people in the, or not shooting, they're shooting robots in the head and laughing, and there's blood flying, and they're like, oh man, you shot that one, that was awesome. And you know, the people are, the humans are portrayed in really kind of a disgusting
well, let's be, to be clear, humans with money.
Yes, very, very, yes.
Humans with a lot
hundreds
of
thousands of dollars
cash
a day to be in the park. But yeah, so it's a great show. It holds up a mirror to humanity. It explores questions of sentience, and there's some cool color symbolism. It's just neat. It's just a cool
show.
The alternate
title was Twitter World.
No, there would have been a lot more swearing
people
in Twitter
acting
World.
Acting like they would if it was Twitter in real life.
I missed that part of the setup. I figured you could get into the park with like $40 and a Coke can.
No.
No.
No. It's, they make a big deal about how it, you actually, they have a fake website for the show. Visit, I think it's called visitwestworld.com, where you can go and like sign up for like a, you know, like basically pretend like you're booking a vacation. They tell you how much it costs and everything. They have like several different packages you can pick, but minimum is $40,000 a day. And it goes up from there to like $500,000 a day, depending upon what, you know, what parts of your Westworld stay you would like to experience.
I will say that they are slowly parading out a number of very interesting kind of, not A-list actors, but good,
well,
really strong B-list.
It's got Anthony Hopkins.
Well, Anthony Hopkins is great, but a lot of the supporting characters are actors that I've recognized
from
playing really good roles in other shows.
Ed Harris is phenomenal.
Solid, yeah.
Ed Harris is good. He's more A-list, but the new guy they introduced a couple of shows ago, the blonde guy.
William, the guest?
Yeah, he's...
Yeah, he's one of those, hey, it's that guy actors.
Yeah. And I like seeing him, and I like seeing some of the others. It's been pretty good. I enjoy the show quite a lot. But here's my pre-spoiler, is that the show is going to get really, really good when it's time for it to go out of the first season.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think they're doing a good slow burn, and I think it's going to pick up. Or I can already sense that it's going to be a big screw you cliffhanger.
Yeah,
they're going to leave us on it.
It's going to really suck because it's going to be so great. And you're going to be so wrapped up. Unlike Better Call Saul, which didn't quite get me as wrapped up in the first season as I'd hoped it would.
I like Better Call Saul.
I like the show, but I don't know.
Second season was good.
But this one's got a good slow burn going.
It is.
It's already really good. It's already kind of setting a tempo, but it's going to be mind-numbingly good. the last episode before the season's over.
And my fear with it was that they were going to pull a Lost, where they were going to have an amazing first season, and then just be like,
go all Bob
now let's go insane, and let's just not even answer anything. But they've said very explicitly they have a 5-year plan for the show, and not a Soviet-style 5-year plan, not communism 5-year plan. They have an actual, like, 5-year story arc that they've plotted out. And the story has a definite pre-planned beginning, middle, and end. So that gives me hope that it's not going to go Lost-style nuts.
Although I've heard rumors that the last two seasons are going to be like a Love Boat, Fantasy Island-style parade every fading actor who will do TV because they don't have nobody else will answer their calls.
That's the fourth season. The fifth season, they're actually just going to slip into Small Wonders.
Oh, what was her name?
Samantha?
Tiffany or whatever.
Actress. That was so long ago. Yeah. Anyway, it's a great show.
Vicky.
There you go. Yes. Vicky.
I'm waiting for the Westworld Stranger Things crossover where they show early years of the Westworld planning.
Yes. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, it's a good show.
And the robots don't have ridges on their heads.
No, they don't. Well, that's the thing. In the original movie, the robots had, like, the joints on their fingers were all ridged, and that was how you could... They made a big Josh... Is it Josh Brolin? The elder Brolin? Whoever was in the movie. I think it was...
James Brolin.
Not Josh. James Brolin and his buddy in the movie made it a point in the 1974 film Westworld of saying, like, you can always tell which one's the robots, because they look perfect, but if you look at their finger joints have these big ridges on them. And that's... They've totally done away with that in the... In the show, the robots are absolutely lifelike.
And it's safe to say that there are characters that you don't know if they're a robot.
I don't know. Okay, so me and Laura are kind of having a big point of contention over whether or not the show is going to sink to the are they or are they not a robot plot line. I think, this is just me personally, I think that the world is interesting enough And the mysteries that they have stood up so far and the world that they've showed us can stand on its own without kind of getting into the he was a robot all along Bernard.
Yeah.
Well, Laura thinks he's a robot too. I don't think he's a robot. I think the show is playing the. I think
he's just socially awkward.
Without spoiling anything that happens in the first episode, because the first episode has a great reveal very close to the beginning.
He's just socially awkward and double jointed.
Without spoiling anything that happens, I think the show plays everything very straight. I think what you are shown on screen is true. I don't think they're doing that. I don't think they're being tricky.
I don't think they've said one way or the other about certain characters. They have not clearly defined them as being either a robot or a human, so they're leaving it up to you to think about. It's not like surprise he was a robot. But they're saying they're not being explicit. I mean, and I think that's from the top character all the way down. There are times you could say,
I don't know.
They've never actually said if this person who works on the staff is a robot.
I think that all the staffers are people, and all the robots are robots.
Reveal that you're referring to.
Well, I can't talk about
Cylons.
I can't talk about the big reveal in episode one.
They have a plan.
What about the one that comes alive only when that one guy sees it?
That's the Weeping Angel. That's a different
actually,
show.
I was actually making a mannequin reference.
Kim Cattrall's in this, right? Is she one of the V-list?
No. No, although there was a scene in, I guess it was in episode 3, so you saw it, where when at the beginning of the episode when Dolores has kind of a vision of everybody in town dead, when she's kind of freaking out, there's a scene where a wolf, like a lone wolf, runs across the street, and it's supposed to be symbolism or whatever. But me and Laura both thought that was actually like Nymeria from Game of Thrones, who has now escaped and is running across all the other HBO shows.
Oh man, but yeah, it's definitely worth watching, and it's one of those shows that kind of snuck up on me. I had no idea it was coming because I don't subscribe to HBO.
Yeah. Well, that's the funny thing is the first season was shot in like 2014. Like they filmed it like almost 2 full years ago. And then it just went through this long, like the principal photography concluded, and then they went through this long, like post-production thing, and they had to do reshoots, and some of it didn't test well, and like it was this massively long, protracted development.
All right, before people say, okay, well, fine, you're talking about this show, it's great, but it's on HBO, and I don't want to pay for HBO, let me give you a suggestion. This is what I'm doing right now. I didn't do it for this purpose, but it's working out so far pretty well. What I did is I called, you know, if you're willing to sit down, if you have Comcast or Xfinity or whatever they call themselves these days, if you're subscribed to that service and you have, and it's time for you to renegotiate your contract or renegotiate your package, call customer retention and they will.
That's important. Not the regular people.
No,
call the retention.
Call the customer
people.
Retention team and say, look, I'd like to renegotiate my packages here. And if you, you'll get your, not only can you lower your costs, but they'll throw in an HBO package for free for 3 or 4 months or 6 months or something. So wait till the, getting towards the end when all the first season is in the can, and then get the free HBO package and then binge watch it.
And
on
we
demand.
And we don't have, me and Laura don't have cable, but we subscribe to the whatever it is,
HBO
the
Go.
HBO Now is the other one. HBO Go is what you get if you have cable HBO. HBO Now is the thing that you get if you don't have cable. But yeah, it's $14 a month.
Yeah,
so
I think it's
We went ahead and dropped it and said, okay, why not? Because I didn't want to have to get cable just for one show. But I'll pay $15 a month just to watch Westworld. Yeah. I guess in Game of Thrones, too.
Yeah. So is that, is not cable, so you watch it streams?
Yeah, it streams.
And you can get HBO Now apps for, like, your, I think they have it for Apple TV and for the Fire. And the Fire TV and the Fire Stick, so you can, and of course on your devices.
So is there any kind of like contract thing, or can you like
sign up
for a month and then
binge
watch in the month? So just basically sign up after the end of the season and then
pay $15
and you get a month free, so you can sign up and just watch until your eyes fall out and then cancel real quick. Well, and the way they do it is they don't take, for the HBO Now, they don't take your credit card directly. You have to buy it through. You have to buy it through an app store. So you have to either get it through the iOS app store or the Google Play store, and then your subscription is an in-app purchase. So they just use third-party. They use Apple or Google to do all the billing, and then you get a password, and you can log in. So, yeah, you can. But I kind of like that because that means when I cancel it, that I'm sure it's because I trust Apple to cancel all that for me. I'm not sure I would trust HBO not to be like, oh, we didn't get your cancellation.
Now, just a second. We looked and you watched 70,000 hours. I don't even know how you did this.
Exactly. Went back in time, double watched.
And speaking of subscription media, I got tipped off by Dwight Silverman to the Amazon Music Unlimited.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, you know, he signed up for Spotify so my wife could have music on demand, songs and artists on demand on the Amazon Echo, which runs about $8 a month from Spotify. But if you have an Amazon Echo, the Music Unlimited, if you only use it on the Echo, is only $4 a month. And it's got, the library's not quite as big, but it's pretty impressive. So, well, there's the Westworld. What's the Westworld theme? We need to get that theme.
That'd be kind of cool.
All right. Well, you've been listening to Technology Bites. We're going to take a short break. Got to get out of here, but we'll be right back after these messages. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
Bob Lee.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Are you a college-bound high school student interested in pursuing a degree in the areas of music, dance, theater, visual arts, or graphic design? Learn about admission requirements, explore your college options, and more at the Houston Performing and Visual Arts College Fair. The free event takes place on Tuesday, November 1st from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Rice University Alice Pratt Brown Hall. Arrive at 6 p.m. for the pre-fair workshop. For more information and to register, visit www.nacacnet.org/PVA. This is KPFT Houston.
Today's the day. You, a family member, or your ex has an old vehicle in your garage. It needs to go. So why not clear up some headaches and do something good for yourself and the city in the process? Just call 855-KPFT-CAR now. We'll arrange to come take the vehicle out of your hands. Not running? That's okay. We'll have it towed away at no cost to you. You'll get a tax deduction and, even better, not have to worry about it ever again. Just call 855-KPFT-CAR right now. Don't wait. There's no time like the present. 855-KPFT-CAR to donate that vehicle this hour. Thanks. This is KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. We now return Technology Bites.
Barrett time, Barrett time.
So Westworld.
Westworld time.
No, you're right. We can't really talk about it on air, but yes, you are completely correct.
Yeah, so now,
I misassessed
that. He's reined us in on a couple of points, contentious points on that.
Will Smith is not a robot, and I robot.
He could be a robot.
And Men in Black, though, that's still up for debate.
But Harrison Ford is.
Ed Harrison Ford is.
Ed Harrison Ford. Nice. It's a good show. Everybody should watch it. It's quality sci-fi. Quality sci-fi and at a reasonable price with a fun story.
Well, you know,
Don't watch it with your kids, though, because there's lots of naked people and lots of bad words.
They're mostly naked robots. So I don't think that counts.
Well, they look like
naked
people.
World. Naked world.
It hasn't been as gratuitous, gratuitously naked as, say, Game of Thrones. So.
Yeah, it's not like. I don't think it's as bad as some of Game of Thrones, but I mean, you know, it's still got a lot of naked people in it.
Well, they got you thinking about people being naked because they're robots,
right? Well,
what's wrong with nudity, man?
Nothing's wrong with nudity, man. But standards and practices says that naked people can't be seen by children because children, I don't know, something. Who knows?
Because the emperor has no clothes.
That's right. Because the emperor was naked, so why can't we be naked, man? I think there's also kind of, you know, you mentioned you think that the season is building to something big and that it's going to have a great cliffhanger. There's a mention in episode one also that the further you get out in the park from little quaint Western town, the crazier things get. And that I think we're going to start to see. I think we're going to start to see some of that starting in episode five when they go to Pariah, which is supposedly the farthest out area in the park where everything is all crazy. I think based on some of the stuff that they've hinted at in the previews and
how big is this park?
Massive, like massive.
Like it's in Montana or something.
Like MMORPG.
That's one of the things that nobody's sure about that they've been deliberately vague about is nobody knows. They haven't said where the park is.
Well, obviously, if you watch the show, the park is on that tabletop that they're looking
yes,
at.
Yes, that is correct.
One of the things
they just make people
shrink
very tiny.
They haven't covered that part yet. The shrink ray.
Honey, I shrunk the cowboy.
Shrunk the guests.
I shrank the naked robots.
No, but I mean, it is like, I mean, you joke, but yeah, it's like kind of supposed to be like Montana.
All of Utah or Montana, yeah.
Yeah, in absolutely, like thousands of square miles.
So it's
enormous.
Set in
going to Montana.
So is it like, it's like set in the outdoors, but there's also like, but it's like a Wild West. Like
yeah, there's
like,
towns.
Yes, it features action both inside and outside of buildings.
So it's like wooden structures.
Yeah.
Like,
yes,
like
and horse
old...
and you know robotic horses drawing you know towing.
Yeah, on the surface, and then like underneath where all the offices and the service bays and everything is, it all looks like a Apple store. Everything's all you know glass and everything glass and aluminum. But on the surface, it's like you know Yeehaw Town.
But of course, the real question, I guess, is why Western Town?
Because the original movie was Western Town.
Yeah.
Although the original movie had three worlds. It had Westworld and Roman World and Medieval World. And Westworld was for, you know, getting your cowboys and Indians on. And Medieval World was for playing swords and stuff. And Roman World was for, if I remember right, was for debauchery.
Just a second. So HBO's already done Game of Thrones, which is kind of medieval world.
Right.
Now they're doing Westworld,
and
so
they
now they got to do...
Well, they did Rome
they
many
did
years
Rome.
Ago. They already did Rome.
Oh, so that's...
Yeah, it's all done.
Some HBO exec saw that movie and said, this is what we need to do. Here's the three good ideas.
Wait, I hadn't even thought of that. I hadn't thought of Rome in a long time. That was a great
That's
series.
What FreeBSD will get you.
Yeah, there you go. It's being stuck in the past.
All right. Hey, Pete in San Antonio, do we have another segment we can do?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, well, to give you your initial taste of Halloween horror, remember when Apple announced the AirPods and they said they would be launched in late October?
Is this a rhetorical question, Pete?
No, it's a scary Halloween question because the trick for Halloween from Apple is that the AirPods are delayed. Apple told TechCrunch that it needs, quote, a little more time, unquote, before the AirPods are ready for a public release without specifying the reason behind the delay.
A little more time for people to get more interested in them.
Well, yeah, you wonder, but there are a bunch of people who I'm guessing, I don't know that they've really been put up, they haven't been put up for order even yet. The thing about whatever this problem is, there was not like any updated launch information. So essentially some other later, I think, would be the closest. Although apparently AirPods have been in the hands of reviewers since September and have
the
gotten largely positive reviews for the fit features, simple setup, and easy recharging. So I don't know. Hopefully it's not one of those like Samsung type problems where they suddenly started bursting into flames in people's ears.
You're like,
we got a big battery, we're getting more life out of
my freaking ears. my freaking ears.
But AirPods, feel the burn.
Well, I don't know what reviewers have them because my reviewers sure don't have them. So it must be some other fancy tech news sites.
Wow. Yeah. Well, Walt Mossberg probably has four or five of them, and they're just dangling around his
he keeps
ears.
Losing them. That's why. Off. You know what? That's why they're not ready because Walt kept losing them, and they kept having to send Walt more, and now there's none left.
Walt kept losing them, but oddly, his grandchildren all suddenly had multiple pairs of the. Anyways, in other news. You know, since the iPhone 7 is, still, you know, the pluses and, well, I guess most of them are backordered like crazy. So then if that means, of course, it's time for iPhone 8 rumors. Yeah, you're still waiting for them to ship your iPhone 7, and there's rumors about the phone that you're going to maybe regret that you bought the iPhone 7 when it comes to next year and it gets released, or you'll be glad that you've been paying that extra whatever a month so that you could jump to the newest phone. Apparently they're working on three new iPhone 8 models to release in 2017, all of which will include glass-backed bodies, according to Japanese news site Nikkei. Previous rumors have also pointed towards three models, but past information suggested Apple would release one premium glass-backed model with an OLED display and then two standard aluminum models rather than all three with a glass body. Citing a supply chain source, Nikkei says Apple released the three iPhones in three sizes, 5.5 inches, 5 inches, and 4.7 inches, which does cover, I think, basically the models they have now between the iPhone SE and the iPhone 7. That's the three sizes they have anyway, but it sounds like they're going to kind of make it where all three size models advance at the same time, because the iPhone SE is, I believe, the guts of the iPhone 6 or 6S.
6S.
And it didn't change to the 7, I don't believe. I don't think they changed the inside, or, you know, the stuff for that particular phone when they did the update. Let's see. All three iPhone 8 models will use glass supplied by Beal Crystal Manufacturing and Lens Technology in China for both the front and the back, which will be held together with an aluminum frame. Foxconn has been working on glass backs, but Beal is said to have the technological edge. Since it's early in the development cycle, here's the caveat. Nikkei warns that Apple's plans could still change, and it could decide to scrap plans to offer three devices, just like the rumors in 2016 where there was going to be one 4.7-inch iPhone and two 5.5-inch models, one with dual cameras and one with a single. And they dumped the single camera model 6 months ahead of the iPhone 7 launch. Rumors suggest, here's the key thing. Rumors suggest Apple's planning on introducing significant design changes in that iPhone because I guess that's the 10th anniversary one, along with an edge-to-edge display that includes built-in Touch ID and other sensors. The device is said to include no home button, advanced biometric features, an improved taptic engine, and wireless charging, which, you know, of course, right now you can, this is the time, throw out your crazy wild rumors. It's going to float on a magnetic cloud and follow you around like a drone. See, then you get the whole drone thing worked in. Make up your crazy Apple phone rumors now, because by next summer, they'll have it more narrowed down. The other big thing is, coming from Apple, there's some product they haven't announced it, other than phones and stuff in forever, some kind of Mac, they call it a Mac, brand new, because it's been so many years since they released any significant updates to their laptops that it practically is brand new. Now the rumors are the thing that happened in the time in the away time when we weren't on the air or when we were fundraising instead. The rumors tightened up that this is just a laptop event. So if you were hoping for a new iMac or a 5K display that you could hook up to whatever computer, or maybe a Mac Pro, the desktop stuff is some other later. I think right after the EarPods come out, maybe. Although there's still some kind of interesting stuff, and Apple may have accidentally revealed some of what they're going to announce tomorrow via the macOS Sierra 10.12.1 update. The update apparently includes hidden Apple Pay images that depict the brand new MacBook Pro with an OLED touch panel. We've talked about this. This is not a greatly kept secret. Basically, they're replacing the function keys with a touch display that's been dubbed the Magic Toolbar. It's not sure if Apple's going to call it that, but that's the thought, where it can be contextual. So the buttons that show up in it can change based on what program you're using or what the situation is, as opposed to having multiple functions on the different function keys where you have to hold down modifier keys and all that kind of fun stuff. Aside from the touch panel, the new MacBook Pro looks similar in design to existing models. It looks like the 13-inch MacBook Pro is used in the images, suggesting the machine will gain speakers located to the sides of the keyboard. That might be some progress if they get better sound. It's impossible to determine the thickness of the new MacBook Pro in the leaked images, but current rumors state that the new MacBook Pro could be thinner and lighter than the existing MacBook Pro notebooks. A redesigned hinge can be seen in the images, suggesting it's indeed quite a bit thinner. It has flatter keys, more like the Retina MacBook. Ports are not visible, but based on past part leaks, it's thought that it's going to have 4 USB-C ports and a headphone jack, so they're not getting rid of that one yet, with the HDMI port, MagSafe port, and SD card slot being eliminated. So essentially, the power slot is going to be a USB-C port. And there won't be the MagSafe stuff, so that'll change that up, again, by the rumors. The thing about it is, how long do you have to wait to find out about these details? Well, tomorrow at 10 a.m. California time, Apple has their event, and they'll tell what it is. Let's see, on just the, Ming-Chi Kuo's predictions are that the next-gen MacBook Pro will be announced at both 13-inch and 15-inch. With the OLED touch bar thing, the new tidbits in the rumor mix are he predicts that they'll use the Skylake processor, the same panel resolution but better display quality and energy efficiency for the screen, I guess. A new option of 2 terabyte solid state drive storage capacity, adoption of a similar processor as Apple Watch to control the OLED touch bar more energy efficiently in the new MacBook Pro models, and like you said, a Type-C and MagSafe-like adapter rolled out by Apple or a third party. So The other thing he said is that Apple will introduce a, quote, 13-inch MacBook, which has been mentioned in the rumor mill. Rather than being a slightly larger version of the current 12-inch MacBook, however, this is likely to be a MacBook Air, which would align with other rumors claiming that only the 13-inch MacBook Air will be seeing an update with the new USB-C ports. So we'll, you know, we'll keep an eye on that, and obviously we can talk about it next week. But now you can go to sleep and dream of rumors of what a new MacBook laptop might offer you if you've been waiting, which I think there's been a fair number of people. I would guess there's a good bit of pent-up demand because Apple has been very slow to give much new, even just processor refreshes, frankly, for the past several years. So we'll see what they offer. Obviously they think it's big enough to have an event. I think it's big enough to have an event, but not big enough. But
they're supposed to do it on Tuesday or the Wednesday, so we can report on it right away.
Who knows, man? Who can say?
It's all rigged. It's rigged against us, the system. Now, last Apple thing I think was on a Wednesday, so we got to talk about it like right away. So maybe this is where they just trade off for us. But that's the bite of the apple for tonight.
La, 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 la. All right. Chomp. Chomp.
It's getting tougher for them to innovate, I guess, and they seem to be slowing down, and that's I do think is disturbing. I don't know that even with announcing some of these new things, I don't think they're going to be stepping into the kind of commanding lead in laptop design and that they had before, that they had in the past, that they had a few years ago.
Yeah.
You know, because if you look, there's a lot of HP and has released some interesting stuff that is more innovative than what Apple's put out. And it's moved beyond just the, you know, oh, we'll do what Apple did and just put this one extra feature in. They're starting to be, you know, larger groupings of things that these other devices are doing, or, you know, cooler looks or more creative approaches that Apple isn't following. So I don't know what's happening there, because I know Steve Jobs is gone, but he wasn't the one who was actually designing the stuff.
He wasn't?
No, he basically would just say, oh, it has to be thinner, or you need to do this, or you need to do that, and he played the like extreme critic role, but he didn't, you know, I don't think that he came in. He didn't come rushing in with a napkin and say, oh, this new MacBook, it's going to fit in a manila envelope and this profile on the side will look like this, you know, with like Japanese pens on parchment paper and all that kind of stuff. So.
Well, I know that the new ultralights from HP and from Dell, not even the ultralights from Dell, the new powerhouse laptop feels like a MacBook Pro. It's got that same kind of aluminum body going on, and when it's closed, you feel like you're opening up a MacBook.
Mm.
Dell
was, you know, there was in the past, I mean, if you remember, there were Dell models that actually you could turn into a Hackintosh, and it took really nothing extra. You didn't have to change any parts out or any of that stuff. And I do know there are stories that in the past that they can talked about licensing Dell as a licensing Dell as a for some of the laptop stuff and that. I wonder, here's a good question for the panel. You know, is it that Apple's just gotten, you know, where we've gotten where you can't really make it thinner and you can't, there's not room to change it enough to be revolutionary anymore, you know, where you can't even shave those couple, you know, where shaving off a couple millimeters isn't worth it for the sacrifices you have to make, and you can't really tell the difference from one to the other? And
well, I'm not sure on that, but I will say on the new Dell, one of the things that aggravates me, I had a chance. I don't get the chance to see that many HPs, but I got one of the new HP Ultralights, and what's really cool about the way they have set the Ethernet up is that they've set the Ethernet port with a little flip down where you, you know, if you have to actually open it up and put the Ethernet cable in. So it, you know, goes wider than the laptop. But if you don't ever use Ethernet, it stays up and it retains its complete thinness. Dell got around that by creating this ridiculous Ethernet dongle. I mean, I guess Macs are, there's no, you know, there's no room to talk on the Macs because they don't have, they have to do an Ethernet adapter as well to maintain the thinness. But I thought HP was pretty creative in the way that they said, okay, we're going to give you an Ethernet port. It will only slightly flaw the design factor if you need to use it, but if you're, if you want to maintain the slick lines and all that, just go wireless, which it works very well. But in a pinch, you can open this port up and stick an Ethernet cable in it.
Maybe they should just make it like where there's just like 8 banana clips on the side, and you have to take your Ethernet cable and just snip the end off and just wire the pairs up directly. Do it really old school.
Yeah, I'll get your crimping tool out and
crimp the Ethernet directly to the laptop. Just get, well, I guess it wouldn't be crimp. You need to get a punch down, get a punch down tool. And just
why go temporary?
That's right. Solder it on.
Or do you remember the crappy old PCM CIA card modems where you had to push the little plastic piece that would stick out?
Horrible. I treasured my pile of them that never worked. You know, I just thought they were, you know, it was nice to have them. And they made I remember the double wide, the ones that it took up 2 PCM CIA slots, but only plugged into 1, but it took up the space of 2.
Because it had more guts.
Yes. Hmm. Oh my God.
But they had the nice plastic piece that you'd kind of push in and then it would kick out and stick out.
Yeah, it'd be the little fake dongle.
Yeah, the little tiny miniature coffee cup holder.
Yes, thimble coffee holder.
That you could plug a phone cord into or just let it...
Well, the double wides gave you the full-size port.
Right.
The little thin ones, you had to pop that little disc out or that little thing out to put it in there and then you would break it. But the double wides, they had the full Ethernet port and the sound jacks and all that stuff in them.
You remember I think I told this joke already. You remember what PCMCIA stands for?
People can't master computer internet acronyms.
People can't memorize computer industry acronyms.
Ah,
you're
see,
close.
I got that wrong.
Very close.
Or one of us has it wrong. I don't know.
Well, if you both have it wrong, then it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Technology.
But yeah, you know, have we? You know, the thing I guess that it's a legit question is, other than those kind of subtle things like how they make the Ethernet cable, you know, how they make Ethernet connect to it, have we sort of reached where form and function have come together so close that there's not much on the laptop, the lightweight laptop front you can do? I think the way to revolutionize it, and one of the Chinese companies. Where, like, they'll take all the important stuff and put it in a brick, and then the screen and the keyboard will be just, like, paper thin, but you have to lug around this, you know, this big brick that has all the ports and battery and all the other stuff with a wire that goes to your super crazy thin laptop.
Speaking of super crazy thin stuff, with all the electronics in a brick, I think you may be jumping ahead a little bit to the... to the Microsoft thing, Pete.
Oh, well, we could go
ahead and watch you hit the button.
In the geek world, we hear about new gadgets and gizmos every day. But can they stand a dip in the snart tank?
Yeah, Lee has some insight, because the thing that started me out thinking about has Apple kind of, you know, where are they on design as it moves forward, was Microsoft had a media event today, and...
Started off a little lame, but quickly accelerated into awesomeness.
Yeah, which you know, there's a sign of the new Microsoft, because it used to go the other way.
Yeah.
one of the big ones that they announced, and I've got after this, there's the 10 coolest new features that Microsoft announced. But from a design thing, they unveiled a new all-in-one touchscreen desktop computer at the event. It's very, very thin, and according to wired, objectively beautiful. But its most unique trait is that the whole screen tilts down on a four-point hinge to become a tabletop touchscreen PC. Doesn't tilt down totally flat. Sits at about a 20-degree angle, which seems like a natural amount of tilt for drawing, drafting, and swiping things around on the screen. I must say, if you took the picture from the article, and if you go to geekradio.com, you can click the links to see this, see what we're talking about. The Surface Studio, you could fool people and tell them that they'd announced a new iMac. The only thing that I think would give it away is the big bulbous mouse that they have with it. Everything on it is all real thin and linear looking, and then there's this mouse that's just kind of this blob mouse that's next to it. But other than that, I mean, it's got a wireless keyboard that looks that's got that kind of Apple keyboard look to it, and all the main. It sounds like part of how they made it so thin and that is all the kind of main stuff, except for the things for the screen, are in the base of it. Although the base is still amazingly small for what's in it. I mean, it looks smaller. The box at the base of it looks smaller than a laptop. Now, the thing about this, the thing that maybe this is why Apple hasn't done it, is pricing on this beautiful piece of hardware starts at about $3,000. And if you go for something with a little more horsepower and such, it gets up into the $4,200 range. It is available for pre-order starting today and will ship in, quote, limited quantities for the holidays.
I look forward to the developers at my company putting in their request to get these to test.
So you can be like, nope.
We really have to have this to test our latest apps
on. Nope.
The Microsoft,
nope.
So along with the desktop, there's a Surface Pen, of course. Well, you know, it's got the screen and that. Same one that's used in the Surface Book and the Surface Pro. There's also something called Surface Dial, which looks like a sleek little jog wheel. It sits on the desktop and works as a scroll wheel or jog wheel. But placing it on the screen automatically brings up a context-aware menu. In a drawing app, for example, it will bring up a color pickle. Color pickle.
All right.
That's magical.
They prefer to be called pickles of color.
There you go. It's like a color.
For example, if you put it on the screen, it will bring up a color picker or a wheel of brush options. It has a haptic engine inside the Surface Dial that makes it feel like a real mechanical piece. A member of the design team says it was modeled after a safe dial, and it feels like that for sure, according to Wired. It runs on two AAA batteries. You take off the swivel base, it's magnetically attached, and the AAA supposedly lasts for a year, and it communicates to the computer via BTLE, which, you know all the acronyms, Bluetooth. BT is Bluetooth, and LE is as low energy.
Low energy.
And
all right.
Become a being of low energy. The dial will come with the Surface Studio through December. After that, it's $100 more. Ouch.
But I watched the video. I mean, I watched the whole presentation. Obviously, I was working it. But when I
working it,
I was working it. I was working the presentation.
Low energy.
Yeah, it was definitely low
working
energy.
It.
And I loved how they didn't really get into what the dial did until after the whole thing had been revealed, and they showed it in a video, and they showed like somebody just plopped the dial down on the screen. And a context menu came up around it, and they started twiddling the dial, and it was amazing. And immediately, it reminded me of the original Microsoft Surface concept, not the tablet, but like the big table, like computer thing that they were showing off, gosh, I don't know, 10 plus years ago. Because it had little context sensitive, like brick things you could drop on it and make it do stuff. It was just really cool. It looked like an extremely intuitive, easy to use, and just visually really impressive little doodad. I really liked that.
Yeah, and so they have a style. I mean, essentially, I think this is a like style leader. It's like when car companies make their kind of super supercar thing that they don't sell tons of, but that sort of sets the that sets the tone for where they're going. And the Surface thing is probably one of the most creative things to come out of Microsoft in quite a while.
Have you clicked over to the store page, Pete, to look at it on the Microsoft Store website?
No.
I highly recommend. Let me see. I think it's just store.microsoft.com. Let me see here. I highly recommend going and checking it out because. Oh, come on. Let's see. Where is it? Yeah, if you go to the, it's stored up, or I guess it's www.microsoftstore.com, and if you click at the very top on the pre-order now link for the Surface Studio, and then just scroll down, they've changed it since earlier today. Okay, well, it doesn't look as much like it did. I was going to say it looks exactly like an Apple website, like the layout, the alternating product shots, the lighting, the product photography, but they've changed it. It looks different now than it did. It looks different now than it did 5 or 6 hours ago.
Must have noticed.
Yeah, somebody probably was like, "Whoa, are you kidding me?"
Yeah, really.
Although, man? Yeah, they do have. I guess they have the three options here. Did you mention the price yet? You mentioned the price, right?
Yeah, it starts at about.
$29.99
and goes up to
they've got the options.
$200.
Yeah, $29.99 for a Core i5 with 8 gigs of RAM. I don't know what the GPU is, and then a terabyte of internal storage. Then you can step it up from there to an i7 with 16 gigs of RAM for $34.99, or you can turn the dial all the way up for an i7 with 32 gigs of RAM for $4,199.
Which, if you compare it to the original tabletop Surface thing, that was $10,000.
It's a bargain. It's half the price.
So the price is going way down.
I think people are giving them, like, the price is high, absolutely. But I think in a lot of cases, Microsoft is getting some unnecessary stick here from people who aren't quite taking into account, like, the hardware that's happening here. Because this is a... You know, not to toot their horn. I'm not the biggest Microsoft fan in the world, but this is a high DPI, you know, whatever it was, 192 DPI, 28-inch monster screen with a digitizer in it that's supposedly stupidly accurate. I mean, this is not a cheap screen. The screen is probably, I don't know, 2/3 to 3/4 of the price of this entire chunk of metal here. It is a beautiful screen.
It says it's a 3:2 aspect ratio, which, just for reference, you know, for the, even if you're not following the numbers, a regular, like, square TV is 4:3.
Yeah.
And your high def TV, at what most screens tend to be, are 16:9.
I don't think they said what the resolution was, but yeah.
It's a 192 pixels per inch.
Okay.
One of the things apparently that they've done with this that I think is a clever thing, and you know, it's one that goes to their credit, is when you're looking at a document in Word that prints out to an 8.5 by 11 inch sheet of paper, it's 8.5 by 11 inches on the screen.
Yes,
it's on the screen that way, so you see the actual thing. I think that's from a design perspective, that's really cool.
Yes, that was really awesome.
Less and less are, you know, I guess that maybe this is Microsoft, maybe, I guess, trying to wedge their way into the, you know, Apple, break into the ad agencies and other places that Apple has dominated since forever.
Well, they also showed off on stage, and it was hard to see it in the webcast, but they showed off on stage that the screen is actually a multi-gamut aware screen, and it can switch color gamuts, like, on the fly between sRGB and Adobe RGB or whatever. Like, they popped it through, like, two different full gamuts on, like, by waving at it or whatever. And that's, I mean, for somebody like me, or, you know, for normal people who don't do design work, that's, like, not even a feature that anybody would care about. But for someone who is doing print design, that is or graphic design of any kind, that's a massive big deal. Because something like that you'd only get on, Microsoft's operating system color adjustments are rudimentary at best and have always been. But this was a huge thing.
Yeah, they've been playing catch up since 32-bit color happened. but let's see, on the Windows 10... it was talked about. The Windows 10 Creators Update will arrive on all Windows 10 devices for free next spring. Microsoft showed off all the new features coming to the multi-mode OS. If you're in the Windows universe, this is what's coming to your Windows. This is Wired's list of the 10 coolest features coming to your Windows PC or Surface device. Paint 3D. Microsoft wants to integrate 3D creation tools into every aspect of Windows 10's suite of productivity tools. Central to it is Paint 3D, a new version of the classic MS Paint app that lets you build virtual models by cutting and pasting 2D images from photographs, doodling 2D images with the Surface Pen, or even 3D scanning a real-life object with your smartphone camera. Paint 3D is a software studio where you can make your own lifelike images. At some point, you got to, for all the 3D things, 3D printing and those types of things, you've got to start getting where the hardware and software on the machine where you're designing this stuff is supporting it. It sounds like Microsoft is going in on that big. Some of the other things, 3D printing, Microsoft. Wants to make it easy for you to do 3D printing. So if you made something cool in Minecraft, you'll be able to send it to a 3D printer. It's the one Microsoft property that's seemingly made for this. So now you can have a copy of that cool Minecraft thing that you made. 3D and Office apps. This either will be a big thing or a big nothing, but Microsoft seems to be all in. They announced they announced VR headsets. Microsoft still loves HoloLens. They did apparently demo that some. But with all this 3D content pumping through Windows 10, it's augmented reality headsets about to get company. Lenovo, Asus, Acer, HP, and Dell will be making VR headsets for both VR games and 3D experiences in Windows. Pricing starts at $300. These VR headsets appear to have positional tracking, a key differentiator that makes them more capable than the smartphone-powered headsets like Gear VR and Daydream. You wonder, is that what's coming, is that you'll have a headset instead of a monitor? I wonder, because they're getting to the kind of pixel density that they could make something like that might be useful, especially for normal people's regular, creating email and writing Word docs and stuff. It'd also make our open office plans look so much more dystopian if everybody's sitting there with a VR helmet on.
Anyways. I don't think so. I don't think we're going to get there. I don't think that's going to ever happen.
Oh, but you can make your office look like a space, the cockpit of a spaceship, and have infinite screens, because you can just turn your head to see where your email is, or
make it look like Westworld.
I have a feeling at some point it's going to develop towards what? That for a lot of people.
A bunch of naked coworkers.
There you go. You'll be able to watch Westworld with your coworkers' faces 3D mapped onto the Android. Let's see. Some other things apparently from Microsoft OS for Microsoft Windows 10 game broadcasting. With the next update, Windows devices will be able to start streaming games in 4K with Beam. DIY tournaments. So now your office after hours, I guess with Xbox, within Xbox Live, the tournament feature will keep score and run a bracket, so you can have tournaments with your friends. Dolby Atmos support, the built-in 4K Blu-ray player in the Xbox One S will soon support Dolby Atmos. If you have an Atmos-ready sound bar or surround system, I think what is an Atmos like nine speakers now? It's like 9 and 2 subwoofers, 9.2, because your usual surround is like 5, was 5.1, and then there was the 7.1 stuff, and I think Atmos is 9. Easier sharing, that one, let's see, has there ever been a Windows upgrade that didn't have easier sharing as part of its one of its features? Shoulder taps. This one's different. A feature that seems like a throwaway, but that Wired guarantees you'll soon see all the time is shoulder taps. With Windows 10 Creators Update, you'll be able to send fun little emoji to your contacts. Wow. So it's a basically a new way to annoy your coworkers, maybe about the tournament, you know, so the new bracket's out, and then you send them a little graphic emoji that pops up at the bottom of their screen, springing to life just above the contact avatar of the person who sent it. That just, I just can't see any way that that would be abused or be non-productive in people's offices. And the final thing, final big thing about it, which is, you know, if you're already invested and you already have Windows 10 and a Windows 10 device, it's free. So, I guess software has kind of, a lot of software seems to have followed the path that we wondered about, which is, you know, like Apple OS updates are free. And now apparently this Windows 10 update for next spring is going to be free as well.
Free at last. So,
of course, it's like, you know, I guess people who are in the Microsoft, you know, ecosystem at their work, you know, you pretty much have to use it. Or our business is still holding on to whatever they went to, Vista or Windows 7 that they went to after they were forced off of XP.
Something was forced off.
Fetch, Lassie.
Yeah. I have cats.
Oh,
too. But usually you can't hear them. But now they've figured out how to
cat
use tools
world.
And make
cat noise. World.
And then you know, this Microsoft Surface. You hate Microsoft. You're anti-Microsoft. So you would like something maybe from Google. Well, the Google Jamboard is here to be your Google Surface thing. Basically, it's Google's take on the whiteboard. Google's G Suite of online tools like Gmail, Google Docs, and Google Drive were designed with collaboration in mind, but they didn't have kind of a whiteboard approach. The Google Jamboard is meant to fix this. It's a 55-inch 4K touchscreen. It links up with a companion app running on iOS or Android, letting coworkers see a real-time feed of the board and add their own notes, doodles, and photos. You interact with the board using a passive stylus or your hand. It can change your writing into searchable text and straighten out your shapes and symbols automatically. And everything gets saved up to Google Drive. So this is from Uncrate. So Dave from accounting has no excuse when he claims not to remember what you talked about at the last meeting. Obviously, something with a 5K, 55-inch 4K touchscreen and these other features is not going to be, you know, $1,000. It's around $6,000. But I will say that it sounds better than any whiteboard that I've dealt with before, obviously for a lot more expensive. But so that may be something. That obviously, they've added a new thing that you need to put next to the foosball table at your .com start on your .com startup overpay for stuff list. And finally, speaking of your .com startup, here's a, you know, what's old is new again. The Aeron chair was debuted about 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago, and it has been refreshed. The original Aeron chair was designed by Don Chadwick and Bill Stumpf and is an iconic it's an iconic design. It has a place in the Museum of Modern Art's permanent collection. But with Don Chadwick's input, the Herman Miller Aeron remastered chair updates the classic for modern offices. It's 3 pounds lighter than the original and made from more sustainable materials. Those include 8Z pellicle fabric on the seat and back that lets air, heat, and vapor pass through, making it more comfortable, while delivering varying tension for increased support. If you've ever sat in an Aeron chair, you know what any of that stuff means. If you haven't, well, maybe go find somebody who's got one. The updated tilt mechanism and controls make it easier to customize and support more varied positions, and individual pads mimic a healthy standing position, making sitting for hours slightly less bad for you. It's available in 3 sizes, which the original Aeron chair was, and in 3 carefully curated color palettes: the light mineral, neutral carbon, and dark graphite. And the price is what you'd expect to pay for an Aeron chair. I mean, it's up towards $1,000. It's somewhere north of $750. And So see, now if you want, you know, you're a millennial, you want to have your own, you're not starting a .com. Ho ho, no .com starter for you. You're doing an app startup, and you want to distinguish between the old, tired old Gen X guys startup, .com startup. Well, now you can go buy all these new Aeron chairs in mineral, carbon, or graphite, and a Google jam screen or whatever the heck it was called, and show how unique and Jamboard, and show how unique and different your business is.
Well, we still have all the original Aeron chairs from when we were a really cool startup company, and they bought Aeron chairs for everyone.
Everybody. Wow.
You know, that was kind of nice. I don't think the new overlords would spend that kind of money.
Yeah, I have the website up here. I was pricing one out that looks kind of nice. I got it in my size, and I didn't put all the crazy options on it, but I wanted, they've got a new color. It looks like kind of a bone white, cool looking thing, and came out to $1,168. That's not $11.68. That's $1,168.
Mm-hmm. You know, so if you were working at Enron when they disappeared, I think some Aeron chairs disappeared.
Take a chair with you, with your hopes and dreams.
I bet a few of those. I'm just gonna use this chair to wheel my box out to the car. I'll bring it right back
to the pickup truck.
Run.
So has anyone been talking about the Microsoft Surface Hub? Is that, because that kind of went
no,
under the radar?
No, they just
too.
They totally blew.
They both came
they,
out.
They blew it this morning. They didn't mention anything about it.
Wow. It's pretty much the same thing as what Pete was talking about, only a few hundred dollars more. I think it's down to the 55-inch form factor, down just about everything.
Huh. No, I hadn't seen it at all.
Yeah.
Let's see.
July 1 is when you can... Now, hold on.
Surface Hub.
Yes.
What
yeah.
is this? Oh, it's like
That's
the...
like a year ago. So that's what I'm wondering. Did that thing ever...
Not that I know of.
Ship.
They didn't mention anything about it. Oh, so it's like a whiteboard, wallboard.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same thing that Google did, except this one goes on a wall instead of having a freestanding, you know...
I see. Nope, didn't talk about it. Mm-hmm. This was more of a consumer event. It was almost, if you guys watch enough of these events and you start to be able to tell which companies do good and terrible presentations. Mm-hmm. Samsung usually does absolutely awful presentations that are just basically filled with, I think it's a cultural thing. It doesn't translate very well over into English because the presentations are, whether it's for a phone or a new computer or whatever, all the Samsung presentations talk about, like, this device at Samsung, we focus on making your dreams a reality and letting your heart fly through the creative cloud of your mind and turning your dreams to true love. And like,
and it's great for the community.
And it's, no, I mean, it's just...
It's very
like
nice.
This,
we also think all the other products are very good in this space.
It's this weird, abstract, like, discussion of emotion and how emotion ties in with a phone. And, like, Microsoft's thing this morning was almost Samsung-y. They got real wrapped around the axle
your ancestors
creative.
Will be proud.
No, they were all like, creative. This allows you to be creative. We're embracing creativity and creators. They're even calling the new Windows update, the new Windows 10 update, is the Windows 10 Creators Update.
Windows 10, we want to be Apple.
Yeah.
And the weird thing, is every time they said, you know, you'll be more creative at your jobs, wink. Everything, it was weird.
Well, until they dropped the Surface hardware on the stage and started talking about it, I was like, this is the worst event ever. This is terrible. And even like the Windows 10 stuff, they were like, and you can download, they had somebody on stage where she had a HoloLens on, and she walked around a big sandcastle and formed it wasn't HoloLens, it was a Windows phone, but did like a 3D model of the sandcastle on stage just by walking around it and quick scanning it. And then they spent a few minutes talking about how, like, and you can take this quick scan 3D model and upload it to this 3D website that we've partnered with, and it's some like janky like 3D online database. There's no local storage of the 3D model. You have to like upload it to their stupid partner website, and then you can download it and mess with it in this new version of Paint that we've put together called Paint 3D, and it's so cool. And like, and it enables creators to create, and you can create custom emoji with it. And she drew out like a quick like fake greeting card. And then they went on about how you can now
upload it to your front page.
No. Well, they made a big deal about how you can embed 3D objects now, scan 3D objects in office documents, particularly in PowerPoint presentations, because your PowerPoint presentations aren't already big enough, right? Your 32 gig PowerPoint presentation with all your transition effects needs to be bigger because now you can have full 3D effects. Anyway, until they brought out the hardware, the event was just a lame town. But then they brought out this hot hardware and everything got all of a sudden a lot more awesome.
Which means I guess they've been watching how Apple used to do it. I don't know that obviously Apple has the pattern because they, you know, saw it, how Jobs did it, but nobody still seems to be able to do an address.
No, and poor Tim Cook. I know that. I mean, you know, Tim Cook is. I'm sure he's a wonderful guy in real life, but he has the stage presence of like a dead fish. And when Tim Cook is presenting...
A gay dead fish.
Yeah, well, okay, I wasn't going to go there. But when he's presenting...
That gives him a little bit more personality.
Because I'm guessing it's sort of embarrassing to the community because usually they're a lot more...
I wasn't going to go to any of your artists. Thank you for taking us there. No, where I was going with this, though, was
And one more thing.
He doesn't have Jobs' presence. He gets this vocal tremor when he starts talking, and he sounds like he's nervous and he's about to start projectile vomiting because he's up on stage in front of so many people. And Microsoft had the fellow who was presenting for most of the hardware, the end hardware portion, is Panos Panay, who is their head of he's called their head of Windows hardware or something like that. They have funky non-traditional titles now at Microsoft because they're hip and new. And Panos is great. He's just super animated. He went off script a couple of times and sounded very extemporaneous. It wasn't like listening to Tim Cook talk, and because he's just not good at doing that. But Panos was great.
He's got a lot to, you know. I mean, he's got big shoes, big turtleneck to step into,
large neck to fill,
large neck hole to fill.
But he's not just like that on these big talks too. He has that same kind of, remember him being interviewed by ABC 13 or, you know, channel, not ABC, by ABC
right,
National about the whole, will you give the back door to the iPhone? And he was very articulate about explaining why he wasn't going to do that.
I think he sucks on stage.
Well, he sucked in that too, because it was that same kind of like, He seemed nervous. He seemed nervous.
He sounds nervous.
I mean, arguably with the two Steves, you had pure charisma and pure geek. So, I mean, that's just the charisma is going to be very hard to follow no matter what on that kind of stage.
Well,
I think.
Woz is not a very good presenter either.
No, Woz is the pure geek. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Jobs was the charisma guy, you know, for the most part. So, you know, that's what he brought, in my opinion.
He did. And, you know,
no one else is going to have that. So whoever follows Jobs is going to have a really hard time. Now, whoever follows Tim Cook...
It's going to be great. Yeah. Next.
Oh, at least you hope because...
Oh, Apple hopes.
One thing companies seem to be able to do is to... this ought to be easy. How could you be worse than...
Well, I just hope we're not bringing back the Pepsi
exec.
If anyone ever says, "Man, I miss Tim Cook," they're going to be saying it from in a van down by the river.
I just hope that we're not witnessing Apple's slide into mediocrity.
Oh, we already are. They've already sales are down for the first time since 2000.
Yes, and I mean yes,
part
but
of that's of where the quarters fall too. You know, and products. Delays in products being released.
Well, it was that their iPhone 6 launch was the most spectacular, incredible thing ever.
Or, you know, make a laptop once in a while. Because, I mean, I would buy an Apple laptop, but I'm carrying around a Surface Book because when I went to go out there, the newest thing out there was a year old.
It'll be tomorrow.
I know.
They'll do them tomorrow.
We'll see.
But you know what? You're going to be in trouble. You're going to be in trouble tomorrow, Barrett, because they've stripped to put their fancy touch thing, touchpad doodad on top of the thing. Mm-hmm. They've stripped out the function key rows, and according to the leaked shots, there is no escape key. So I don't know how you're going to use Vim or anything else.
Okay. I'm going to have to rememorize my meta keys. I already bought the lens flare camera.
I guess you could just remap caps lock to control and then just use Emacs.
I've had to do that in a few weird ways because like the Windows keys and everything's like, okay, like, this is my meta, this is my escape, this is my... So I get in some really weird twistery kind of finger contortions when I'm trying to run certain
Emacs
macros. Emacs. Yeah.
Or you're going to have to pony up for the expensive console that activates the screen and puts an escape key. So it'll charge you $20 for a thing that all it does is give you the normal console... but it puts an escape.
It'll be a dongle. Make an escape key dongle.
Basically, the entire OLED bar turns into a box with ESC in the middle of it.
Or you'll just have to be like, bang it. Hey Siri, type escape.
You'll never escape.
I'm sorry, Barrett. You can't escape.
There is no escape.
I'm sorry, Tim Cook won't let me.
Let me fire up VI for you. Hang on.
I'm sorry, Barrett. You cannot escape from me ever.
There is no escape. Haven't you watched Westworld yet?
I'm sorry, Barrett. Stop using Vim and
open the Amazon bay doors.
I do wonder, you know. The thing about it, though, is Steve Jobs could just be inscrutable and, we're working on some very interesting things. And you know that some of the time he, like, went back to Apple and said, we got to figure out something interesting to work on, where, obviously nobody can vamp that way now with Apple. But some of the things, the designs they're replacing, the MacBook Pro designs they're replacing are from, like, have not changed substantially since like 2012, and that's kind of long. They don't have to change the exterior. The tough part is they've barely changed the interior. They haven't even done sort of the kind of basic workmanlike thing of, okay, there's a new processor out from Intel, so we've refreshed the innards, so the 2014 has blah blah blah. They've seemed to be, you kind of, for all the money that Apple has and has brought in business, you kind of wonder, like, the teams for that stuff, are they dropping the ball? Where is the problem coming from? Why isn't Apple innovating more or at least just keeping up in the fields where they already were present and were already doing well? And seem to just kind of just stop. It's very odd because it is a long time. And the thing I said is I don't think that the deal tomorrow, it's not going to be, I don't think it's going to be that exciting. It's not going to be like when they announced the Retina screen stuff when they hadn't had that before. You really wanted one, maybe you knew that you weren't going to be able to drop the three large that it was going to take to get a hold of one for a while, but you wanted it. And this OLED thing is nice, but it's not crazy compelling. I mean, other than it being a new Apple thing. And I'm a fan of Apple. I have used Apple hardware for a long, long time. But they, it seems like they're taking their audience a bit for granted. And I don't think long term that's good for the company.
All right. Well, that's all the Apple bashing we have now.
I got more in me. But we got to go off here.
All right. Well,
Lucille.
What?
Apple bashing.
Little Wilbur.
It's fall. It's fall apple bashing time here in...
Hey, just so you know, a week from Friday is the Geek Gathering.
Cornucopia of fun.
Cornucopia of fun, right? Smorgasbord. Yeah.
Our special super late Halloween spectacular. Oh. Come in costume. Or just...
Yeah, why not? All right, well, you have been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Parrot.
I'm Lee.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
Yes, he is.
KPFT is seeking local organizations, businesses, and individuals to take part in our Community Partner Program. Community partners help KPFT through supporting initiatives of the station, reducing our pledge drives, and be key contributors to our success. As a community partner, your organization or business becomes invested in a richer way in KPFT. You help keep important independent radio flowing. Interested in being a community partner? Contact Development Director Robin Lewis anytime. Just call 713-526-4000 or just send an email to robin@kpft.org. Thanks for your interest in our Community Partners program. This is KPFT Houston.
Pacifica is listener-sponsored radio. Listener sponsorship is an answer to the practical problem of getting better radio programs and keeping them. A focus on advertisers or the mass audience accounts for the mediocrity of corporate radio. With such mediocrity, improvement of radio is utopian. When listeners support the radio they enjoy, their choices become better. Listener sponsorship takes control of your radio out of the hands of companies and into the hands of the community. But maintaining this sort of radio requires you. Your pledge of support keeps KPFT on the air as a vital community resource. So call our membership department at 713-526-4000, extension 314, to become a member today. You can even go online at kpft.org to make your pledge. Your pledge is essential to keep listener sponsorship viable for generations to come. So call 713-526-13526.